Hello and welcome to Our Dad's Died. My name's Rich.
My name is Tom.
And on this episode, we're joined by the one, the only, the Philip Kostoletsky. And I have practiced saying his name correctly because he told us how to say it during the interview. I've known him for quite a long time. I'd been getting it wrong the whole time. And then I immediately got it wrong when we were speaking to him. So it's good to just get it on record early doors. Philip Kostoletsky. Oh, God. Philip Kostoletsky. It's not even a hard word to say, but it's really in my head now. I'm going to keep getting it wrong.
So much so that when you introduced him, you referred to him as the one, the only Philip Kostoletsky. I mean, yeah. That's probably true. I doubt there's many Philip Kostoletskys in this world.
Yeah, but in many ways it was stalling.
Giving myself a little run up. You were buying time. You were worried.
I'm nervous. Yeah, it's a nerve-wracking thing. There. You don't want to get someone's name wrong.
My last name's all over the place. I've been called all sorts of things.
Yeah.
One time I went to a hotel and they said, Mr. Jerkins. They popped an S on, for God's sake. How do you find an S?
How would that be a name as Jerkins? No one. Come on, you'd change it.
No one.
Gherkin is one thing, but Thomas Jerkins. Come on.
It's just not my name. It's far away. It's too far away. Like obviously, Gherkin normally becomes.
Very grubby Dickens character, isn't he? Thomas Jerkins. I don't want to be involved with that guy.
Go on, you little boys on the street. Oh. It's Thomas Jerkins here. Oliver Twist and you the Artful Dodger. If you come to my house again, I'll find ya and I'll put you in the box.
And that's
quite hard to know what Mr. Jerkins' sort of motivation there is. Because for one thing, he seems quite into the little boys. And then the little boys were coming to his house, but he warned them if they came to his house again, then he would find them. So he doesn't want the boys around, but he also he will get them if they're at his house.
Every time I do a character, I worry about my brain sometimes. These characters are so horrible. Well, don't worry. Mr. Jerkins, the Dickensian villain, Mr. Jerkins, is not on this week's episode as a guest. Instead, we have Philip Kostoletsky talking about his dad and losing his dad and his childhood. And it's quite fun and quite funny. And it's also a bit sad.
Yeah.
It's how we try and do it.
It's quite a profound one. I think Philip is... He's very eloquent, and I think he's thought a lot about how the loss of his dad has affected him, and he was very insightful. I found it a really interesting conversation, and also he, to explain, if you don't know Philip, he's a very funny stand-up comedian, so of course he was funny during the episode. I've known him for a few years, Tom, first time that you'd spoken to him, but he was great, and I think if you listen to the whole of this episode, you'll really enjoy it. And if you listen to parts of it, to be honest, I don't know why specifically. It's one of those ones that it makes sense however much you listen to, but do listen to all of it because it's, I mean, it really...
Personally, I'd rather you listen to all of it. In fact, what I would rather you do, and just from a listening figure perspective, if you could listen to it in sort of 1 minute chunks and just keep closing and reopening the app every time, that'll really get the numbers up. It might not be a great listening experience, so listen to it on another device at the same time, and then that'll just really get it.
Perfect. One thing that I will mention that Philip actually told us just after we'd finished recording, which is sort of a funny little twist of fate, was that he was actually wearing his dad's cardigan, not deliberately, but throughout that interview he was wearing a cardigan that used to belong to his dad. Funny how those things go, isn't it? So when you are listening to this interview, bear in mind that he's wearing the cardigan of his long lost father.
The cardigan of a dead man.
Picture him as a tiny little boy in a massive cardigan. It's very cute. Here comes Philip Kostoletsky. This is a thing that I've raised with you before, is that you sometimes say whittle.
You'll write
the word whittle.
Yeah, W-I-T-T-L-E.
Yeah, and it makes me feel uncomfortable in a way. Yeah,
I knew you were going to say the word uncomfortable.
Yeah. I don't know what it is about it.
Is it childlike?
I guess that it's childlike. I think also when you say it because of your accent, it sounds sinister.
Oh, God.
Because you've got quite a deep voice.
Are you so you're saying you say whittle instead of little?
Yeah, so I'll say like.
That's what we're saying. Sorry, I thought you were just saying, you know, sometimes you say whittle.
Oh, as in.
Like whittle.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Rich was like really against that.
I was going to start like this woodworking business, and then Rich really just shot that in the tank.
Yeah, he was like, come on, whittle. What are you, a child?
It feels unnatural. That's all I'm saying. Leave the wood as it is, okay?
I will leave the word whittle out of my vocabulary for this recording.
Okay, you say that, but I'm going to be tense throughout.
I bet.
How you doing, man?
I'm very good, yeah. How are things with you two?
Yeah, all good. Tom's a little bit cold. I'm a bit too hot, so...
A little bit cold.
Temperature-wise, how are you?
My body is fine, my hands are cold.
Okay, good. So we've got quite a happy medium throughout the three of us. A happy medium in which none of us are happy. So thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having me.
The way that we do it, there's a little intro and outro that we'll record like on the week that it goes out. So I won't do like, this is Philip Kostelecki, this is blah, blah, blah. We'll do all that in the intro.
Yeah.
So we'll just, when it starts, it will just be straight into a conversation about body heat, I assume.
Nice, nice. Just so you know, it's Kostelecki, not Key.
Kostelecki, is it?
Yeah.
Have I been saying that wrong the whole time?
Probably have, but it's fine. Many people get it wrong.
Kostelecki. Let's ski.
Kostelecki. Yeah, Kostelecki, like the coffee shop, and then let's ski, like let's go skiing.
Right. Nice.
You can tell I've had to say that so many times in my life.
Yeah. Through gritted teeth, once again.
But you're right. Me saying whittle is annoying.
Where is your surname from? What side of the family is that?
It's from my father's side. It's Czech/Polish. I'm not really 100% certain where it's from. So Kostelecki, I think in Poland means church or something like this. I think it does in Czech as well. But the spelling of it is not a Polish spelling. So spelling of it in Poland would have been with a CKI ending, which would justify the ski sound. Sometimes I do gigs up north and they go, oh, this next act remind me of the Kostelecki. Kostelecki. So then they go, yep.
Very nice.
It's a riot. And
So your dad's, where was your dad from?
My father was Austrian.
That's even more confusing.
Yes, it is. But Austria, obviously, I don't know if you're aware, used to be a lot bigger as a country.
Yeah.
And then these goddamn... So I think they were like, they would have been Czech / they would have been Czech and then moved to Austria. So they became Austrian through that.
I see. Right. And was there a lot of that culture in your sort of growing up?
No, I don't think my father was particularly Czech. I think he was fairly Austrianized at that point.
Right.
But I think both his parents were Czech, or they're both Czech Austrian.
I see. Right. Okay.
I have to say that the joke hanging here is I gotta check if this is true. I'm just sorry. It just was there.
I know. I do. I feel like we all left it hanging for a reason, and sadly, sadly now it has been brought to fruition. So quickly tell us about your dad.
What are you?
Very open-ended question, that one, wasn't it? Tell us about your dad.
And quickly as well. Rapidly.
My father left when I was 9. So just a bit of history of born in Austria. My mom is Slovenian-American and my dad was Austrian. And we grew up in Austria for a few years, I grew up for a few years, and then we moved to Slovenia. And then by the age of 9, my father had left.
Right.
So sort of my parents the relationship was very unhappy, caused mainly, I think, because of my father. I'll get into more details of that in a second. Mm-hmm. But so he left when I was 9, and then it was this amazing thing. I almost say this as a joke. It's incredible. He managed to leave my mother and then divorce her. It was quite impressive how he managed to do both. Basically, he left. He would often go back to Austria for like a weekend just to buy groceries or do whatever things he did. I didn't really know what he was up to. And then he left on a Thursday, and then on the Sunday the divorce papers came through, and it was quite shocking. Yeah, it was. And then I didn't see him again for 5 years, and then I saw him 3 more times in like a 1 year period, because of the divorce lasted about 5-6 years, and as part of the hearing or the divorce court, whatever, we were given the option to see him again. So I saw him 3 more times, and then he died when I was 16. So whatever math that would have done, I would have seen him at the age of 14 and then never saw him again.
Jesus. So, yeah.
Heavy shit, huh?
A lot to unpack. How old are you? You're a fair bit younger than us, I think.
I figured it out. Yeah, I'm 26. Right. And so I figured this is his 10 year. November was his 10 years after he died. He died on 9/11, as in November 11th.
Right.
November 9th he died. So yeah, the European 9/11, which was one of the few, when I noticed that, it did make me chuckle slightly. I just went, that's good, isn't it?
It claims yet another victim.
So yeah, so my father, I think the reason the divorce took forever was because they were married in Austria, and he divorced her through Austrian courts, but then we were living in Slovenia at the time. So it actually, I think they ended up sort of having to get divorced in two countries.
Oh, right. Okay. Which does sound complicated.
What an upbringing.
Yeah. And then he also would not he wouldn't yield in any way. He wanted a lot. My mother had to fight for full custody because to give you a little snapshot of my father, he was not a particularly nice person, but
that is coming across, I'll say.
Yeah.
So far.
He, I think he had serious anger issues. I don't know where this come from. I mean, it's complicated. I've only started talking to my mother about this now, what it was, but you know, he grew up in Austria in a very rural setting. This is only stuff I've learned about him afterwards. I didn't know him that well. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I had a really good relationship when he was living in our house. I was his favorite child, which again just tells you the type of person he is, because you should not have favorite children.
Yeah,
but he showed very clear favoritism towards me, which I loved it. I lapped it up. But I didn't like is that my siblings would often comment on that, and they would make a point of that, and then that didn't make me feel good. But
yeah.
I also saw his anger that he used to shout a lot at my other siblings. One of my brothers in particular really got it rough. So he was a bit of a tough cookie, to put it politely. Yeah, so he was born in Austria, grew up in a very, a rural setting, and then he lived in the city in Vienna. His father was a soldier in World War II in Austria. I don't think he was particularly affiliated towards the Nazi party, but I think it's like anything, he was conscribed. I only say this because my mother had said that he did not seem to have strongly held opinions that you would expect from somebody who strongly believed in the Nazi party. That's the only reason I say this.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really good. I don't know if you guys have seen the Arnold Schwarzenegger documentary that's come out recently.
No, I haven't.
He talks about his father fought in World War II as well for Austria. But you have to understand, Austria lost the war, but they pretended that they didn't. And so you had this, I can only imagine what it was like, you had a generation of men who just lost and they were losers, and they were, you know what I mean? They also fought in war. So it's not like they had the benefits of being it was for something.
Yeah.
And then on top of this, maybe the realization that you actually were fighting something for something that was bad. Austria, unlike Germany, did not really denazify as much as it could have, because it just said it was neutral and stuff like that. So there's a big historical context that I think influences my father's father, and then probably through him. But he also, one of his siblings before him, I think, was stillborn.
Oh, wow.
And then I think it's called a rainbow baby, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that, what does that mean? A rainbow baby?
Rainbow baby is the baby that's born after a miscarriage or something.
Oh, I see. Right.
Although I think the child might have actually been born and then died, so it was even worse for everyone. But anyway, he ended up. I think he was also a favorite of his parents, which is really weird. And he was kind of seen as this gifted child, but then he kind of flunked out of school when he had a really good opportunity to kind of make something of himself. So I think he was a big enigma. But at this time, fucking nobody talked about mental health. You know what I mean? Especially,
yeah, of course,
given how conservative Austria is. Especially at that time.
Yeah, I can imagine it wasn't a hugely touchy-feely way of growing up.
You mean the people who fought for the Nazis in World War II? Yeah, I don't think they were particularly but how does this make you feel? I know you lost the war, but, so I don't know that much detail about it. I wish I could have had an opportunity to talk about it, but I never was old enough to really grasp this in a conversation. So, yeah. So, well, I don't know. It's a lot to talk about my father as an individual. But I remember I have a lot of sweet memories with him. Of course, there were times that, he took me out for ice cream and stuff like this, or, he was just very nice to me. But the thing is, he also was never really there. I asked him a lot of times, classic, could you go out and play some ball with me or something like that? And just nothing. Yeah. And he was also very distant. And then when he did get angry, I only had it a few times. Luckily, one of my brothers had it a lot worse. But his anger, I've never seen anything like it. It was a real frightful anger. Sorry, this is really depressing for anybody listening right off the top.
Oh, that's the podcast. It's fine.
This is what they've come here for.
So, yeah, you've come for the dirties. If I do that, that's really going to affect the cough. you come for the, you're sad little boys listening to this. When you fucking, oh, your dad's dead. Now you want to hear some other people whose dads are dead. Where?
well, I mean, let's not alienate the audience too much.
Yeah.
Because that is them.
Yeah, that is true. That's us.
That is them. Yeah. That's them.
If you meet them, that's how they sound.
It's all of us.
It is. That's us too. Yeah. It's all of us. We're all the same.
So your dad left when you were 9, and then you said you didn't see him for like years.
Yeah,
did you have contact with him, or was he just gone?
You know, he wasn't completely gone. He was in Austria. I don't know where he was. He would send us emails, He sent us like Christmas packages every once in a while. He even like sent an email, like a letter through my school. Yeah. And I think one of my brothers was in contact with him roughly. So my eldest brother, he was obviously much older and would have had a real relationship with him. And so, yeah, I have like a random letter that, or a Christmas present, weirdly enough, that was given to my brother to give to me, but I didn't receive it until like, I think years after my father had died. And it was a letter that he had, so that was really bizarre. So I have this, I have like some memories of my father, but a lot of it is like through random like letters and stuff I've received. It's very, it's very bizarre.
Your dad died, and then many, many, many years later, you get a letter and a gift.
Yeah. I'll show it to you right now. Are you interested?
Please show it to us. Yeah.
So one of the
it's extraordinary.
Yeah. So I might read it out loud. I'm trying not to get emotional doing it, but it'll be tough.
Yeah. If you feel comfortable doing it, we don't want to force you to. But
if I start crying, I'll stop.
Obviously, in terms of content.
I mean, yeah, if you could cry, that would be ideal.
If you could cry straight away.
Yeah, I'll try my best to do that. Where is it? So there's a few of them that I keep here. I can't remember where it is. See, anyway, this is the Christmas present. I don't think I can open it. I'm trying to remember. There was one particular letter that I found really amusing, actually. I mean, I read it and I get very sad. Mm. Yeah, what is it? Yeah, so he wrote them in German and English, which was really nice of him because his German wasn't very good. His English wasn't very good, and so it was quite funny. But I'll tell you some more less German stories. But anyway, he wrote this in German initially, which I was able to read, and then the last line of it was, "Weil ich dich nicht weiß, ob du noch Deutsch sprichst, versuche ich mich auch in Englisch," which means I don't know if you still speak German, so I'm going to try it in English. Which is really funny because it's like if I got to that point in the letter, I would have just switched to the English one right away. So he wrote this. I don't know what year it was, but he said, "Hi, Philip. Philip, I'm missing you every day, and I'm still waiting to see you again, to hug you with all my feelings I have for you, to see you how you are growing. Please give," that's my brother's name, "some message for me. I know you tried to get my phone number from..." Okay, this actually gets not emotional, but like too personally involved. But he talks about like sending me presents and stuff and asking if I got them. And so there was like, it was weird because like that is obviously very sad, as you can imagine. Give me a second. Mm. But on the flip side of that, like, he wasn't a good father. So he like really embraced the, this is a joke as well. I say my dad had divorce dad energy when he was still married to my mother. Like he was not like, so it's stuff like this where it's only recently that I sort of realized, oh, this is a guy who just, he obviously cared about his kids, I think because of a biological love, but I just don't think he was a good father. And so it doesn't, it's weirdly enough, reading it in German affects me more than reading it in English emotionally.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah,
probably makes sense. Sorry, I don't know. I feel like I'm scatterbraining.
No, with the blur on the screen, I couldn't quite see the gift, but it looked like it was still wrapped.
Yeah, I've unwrapped it and rewrapped it just because I don't like to see it open, I guess.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, so it's, and then the card was like, it says Frohe Weihnachten, which means Happy Christmas. So I got that. Yeah, years ago. So yeah, that's, you know what I mean, like this.
What's in it?
It's a book. It's like a kid's book. So I think he must have sent it a few years before he died. When I think it was like a young kid's book and stuff like that. So I just have that, and it just sort of exists.
Why did you rewrap?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I think I kind of liked it in that state. I just as a gift. You know, maybe it's the potential of what what the present is than the actual gift itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it means a lot because it's a gift. And so it stays a gift, whereas otherwise gradually it just becomes a book, doesn't it?
That's really good. I've never thought about it that way, but yeah.
Because if it's just on the bookshelf with everything else, it's just another book.
Yeah, very true.
I'm still trying to get my head around sort of what your... Because you said that like he wasn't a good father, but that sounds like something...
Objectively, he wasn't a good father. All things considered. But for me, I loved him a lot. When he left, it destroyed me. Like,
yeah,
that's
what I wanted to get to. Was like, were you aware back then that... Did you feel like he wasn't being a good father or
no, I don't think I was that aware of it, because he was also really nice to me specifically. But yeah. I was aware that something was up for sure as a kid. Apparently there were a lot of other stuff that he used to do. Like he used to just like, when we would take out the trash with him sometimes, if we crossed the street with him, he'd get annoyed. And then if we didn't, he'd also get annoyed. He had a really bad temper. There are stories particularly pertaining my mother and him where he was just like really shouting. I'd like to say this clear. I don't think he was never physically or sexually abusive to any of us. Let me just be clear on that. But I think that's good. Nice.
And
nice.
I'd like to say same for my dad. Never physically or sexually abusive.
Sorry, same
for me as well. Just clear my own record. And you guys didn't agree to that, and that's why.
Sorry, same for me. Sorry, I didn't quite understand. Sorry, yeah, same for me. No, no one, everyone's fine.
Yeah, I'll also go on record with that.
The problem is when you do go on record with that, it sort of sounds like...
Yeah, why have you felt the need to go on record?
Yeah, normally people don't need to go on record with that, do they? That's the thing. That's the problem.
I don't know. I it's just complicated because I think my memories are a lot different than the ones that my siblings and my mother had. So it's a bizarre... I've kind of had to build the picture of who this person was. But I also have cut into this weird state where I don't know if it's weird to say, I just don't care. Like... when he left, I was really destroyed. Like, I was so sad about it, because I just didn't. I even remember as a kid thinking, like, I don't know if I have the mental capacity to understand what's going on right now. Probably not in those words, but I remember just being like just shocked, and I just had no idea what was going on. I used to have this weird thing where, like, after he left, I cried every Sunday before school, like the night before school on Monday, and then I kept this photo of him under my pillow. God, this is so sad.
Heartbreaking.
I had this photo of him like cooking a hot dog at a grill or something like that, and I kept it under my pillow every day. And I remember occasionally, like, because my sister and I, our rooms were right next to each other through a wall. But the thing is, it was the way the house was worked. You actually had to go a long way around to get to the other room. And I remember I was crying a lot. And my sister at one point, she's only like 3 years older than me, so she would have been about 12, came into my room and just like was there just to be around, you know.
That's nice.
And so, yeah, I was really destroyed. I was also the only kid in my class who didn't have a father. And I remember... I have this weird memory in, I think, fourth grade or something like that, sitting under, like, I was sitting in a closet. I don't know how I got there, but I was like closed, or I was underneath, and I could hear my classmates above, and they didn't know I was there. I don't know how this scenario worked out, but anyway, there was a scenario where I could hear them, but they didn't know that I was listening to them and stuff.
Right.
And I remember hearing them talk about their fathers and being annoyed, and I was really upset because I was like, God, I wish I had that as an option. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I was the only, like, literally no other kids in my class up until, what was it? I think until like the eighth grade. Then there was another kid whose parents were divorced, but he didn't talk about it that much. And then it was like second year of high school. I remember there was a kid, a friend of mine, Nika, who we were in a German lesson, weirdly enough. And she's talking about her parents. And she said that in German, she said her parents are divorced. And I was aware of the word, but I never really thought of it. And I heard her say that. And I honestly remember sitting there thinking, like, what? You can just admit that your parents are divorced? Like, that's an option? Or like they're not together? Like, I was like blown away that these were capabilities are option available to a kid. I was like, yeah, I was shocked.
So you felt like you couldn't even tell anyone when you were in school?
I talked to almost nobody about it as a kid. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I remember, yeah, as a kid, I mean, my childhood has a lot of really fun memories. I had a lot of, like, my mother was really nice, and I had a really great relationship with my siblings, and there was a lot of love there. Yeah. But there was a void. Yeah, boy. There was a void.
Oh, there was a void. That's for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's why you're a comedian now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe.
That's how it works. the thing that interests me is that, So, you know, obviously you were devastated when he left, and then for 5 years you didn't see him. You had like intermittent contact and stuff. Yeah. And then you said you saw him 3 times when you were 14.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I was when I was 14.
I mean, were you, by that point, were you angry? Had your feelings changed about him? Or
I didn't know who he was as a person. So I didn't know that he was that angry person. I didn't know that side of him. It's only something I've really, really come to realize in the past few years, talking to my mother, my brothers, and a bit my sister. I was the opportunity came up, and we had this like mediator there. I remember my sister and I went to the first one, and I remember putting my shoes on to leave the house, and we were going to go see him, and I cried, and I cried really hard. And it was weird because I didn't really cry in front of other people. And my mother was there, and she kind of was supportive of that. And then my sister was there and stuff. And then this this other mediator lady was there, and I was crying, and I said, "I'm really sorry." And they said, "It's okay to cry. It's a big day for you. Like, it's emotional." And then I saw, we went over, walked over to where we were going to meet him. It was about like a 15 minute walk, and I saw him, and I hadn't seen him in 5 years. And it was really emotional. It was really sad. And I hugged him, and my father was a very chubby guy. And I have a lot of memories as a kid of like us all watching TV together as a family, and me laying on his stomach because it was a nice little pillow. And then I'd hear his like little stomach grumbles. And so I hugged him again. Like he was fat, dude. He had like, a chub to him. And so I gave him a big hug, and we talked a lot. I don't remember what we talked. It was sort of in half English, half German. We just sort of talked about what was up, and I told him that I had like an appendicitis a year ago, and he said, "Oh, it's a shame I wasn't sort of there to hear about this," or, you know, that's, but then, so then my sister, we left, and then I had the opportunity to see him again. He would drive down from Austria for this, and I saw him twice more. I saw him, I think, once just randomly, and then once we went to go see the Tron film together, Tron Legacy, and because I wanted to go see it. Yes, this is the kind of shit that you do. I remember we went to Kino Colosseo, which is in Slovenia, Ljubljana. It's one of the only one of the few cinemas in Ljubljana. And we went to go see the Tron film. So it was me, my father, and this like mediator lady, this mediator woman.
But she was
Did
there.
She have to come to that?
She had to come to that.
Even though you're just seeing Tron Legacy.
Yeah, but because the thing was, it's like my mother had custody. So technically.
Oh, I see. Right.
This lady was there, and she spoke German and English. So it's part of the reason that she was beneficial, that like if he got angry, that she would be able to understand about it.
She must have loved that. It must be, what a great day that it's like, and today you're just going to go and watch Tron Legacy.
Dude, you have to understand, they were like 50 plus, both of these people. They didn't want to see Tron Legacy. By the way, they didn't speak English that well. So we went to go see Tron Legacy as a group, and then they probably didn't understand everything. I don't know why we saw Tron Legacy, you know, because it was just in the movies and I wanted to see it.
Fair.
So then we had a coffee afterwards, or we went to McDonald's or something like that. We did that, and I think I saw him a third time. I can't remember where, but the thing is, once we hung out the second time, we started talking about stuff, and my father really wanted to push to get my mother to give him alimony. But the thing is, alimony is often only given to the person who's taking care of the kids.
Yeah.
And my mother was already taking care of us, so there was no reason for him to get anything. And she was really annoyed because she was like, any money I'd give him is stuff I would already spend on you. So there's like, it was just bizarre. And then when we hung out the second time, that's when he started pushing this kind of narrative against my mother. And he started saying stuff that like kind of wasn't appealing towards her, or trying to push me in a certain direction. Mm. And that's where his like kind of emotional manipulation, I think, was beginning to start. Mm. With me, even ever so slightly. But and he gave me gifts sometimes, but they like were very weird ones, like that didn't really have anything to do with me as a person. So it was just a very bizarre, it was like the first one was really nice and sweet, and then even after the second one or the third one, I remember I emailed my father at one point, and because there was a whole thing about how he wouldn't let go of this alimony thing, and I thought maybe I could ask him to do it. And I forgot to tell you, by the way, he didn't mention that he had kids in the divorce papers.
what?
Yeah, he didn't mention that he had children with my mother. You know what I mean?
Jesus. Like,
so this is like, it's amazing. Insane. It's insane sometimes when I think about all this stuff coming together.
Yeah.
Like it's bizarre.
Wow.
But anyway, so I sent an email to my father and I said, look, this is the one thing that's left is the money part of it. And I'm going to basically give you an ultimatum where, like, if you ever want a chance to see me again, you're going to drop this and get this finalized quickly. And if you don't do that, I'm never going to talk to you again. And he responded and he completely ignored the question. He just went on some rant about something else. And then apparently when my mother saw him in court once, she kind of said this to him. And then he said, nur das Geld, which means only the money. That was his response. So, yeah.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what the fuck, dude?
That's another tick in the not a great father column,
yeah,
isn't it?
So it's weird. It's like, I don't know, man. Like, I still have love for him. And I
yeah,
would,
of course.
If... yeah, and then, yeah, he, I mean, yeah, we're ready to get even sadder here.
Let's get to the good stuff.
We can get even sadder.
We've been teasing the audience long enough. Let's give them what they came here for.
So it's more about how I started as an adult now to start to sympathize with him a little bit, which was that I wish I could talk more about my father being alive like other people have talked about, but I think it's more, maybe this is more interesting for people who didn't have a good father and then they died and you're sort of left with these questions. When I found out that my father had died, I don't think this is the really sad part about him. I'll tell that story in a second. So I found out, I was just, my mother had this boyfriend in France at the time and mm-hmm. she was like flying out to see him. She'd often so there was a good period of my life where I always had siblings in the house. So I was never really alone. But then the last years of high school, my mother would often go out to see this guy and I would be left alone in my house for a weekend. And those were lonely days, buddy. Lonely, lonely days.
And how old were you at that point? Like 15?
16, 17.
Right, okay.
15, 16, actually. More like 15, 16, 17. Yeah, so... and I was at home and my mother called the house phone and I think she was transferring in like some subcountry flying. I don't remember where. And she said, "Hey, look, I was going to tell you this when I got home, but I just thought I'd tell you now that my father died." And I remember hearing that and I fell down like immediately. And I was just like, oh shit. Like, oh God. And I couldn't tell you, this gets really fucking bad really quick. I'll tell you. Yeah. So I was really upset. And she said, "Look, I'm really sorry. I just heard from," so he had two kids before my mother as well. And she said, "One of them told me that. And I just wanted to let you know." And I said, "Okay, cool." And I cried a lot, obviously by myself, just in my bed, just crying. And then I talked to a friend of mine and I called him on Skype. This is the first person, because I just needed to talk to somebody. And I called him, whole doop, 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 that whole Skype thing. And I said to him, I said, "Hey man, how's it going?" He's like, "Yo, what's up?" And I said, "I don't know how to tell you this, but like my dad died." And he was like, "Oh shit, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And I don't remember what said. There was either a pause or a few more things. And then he said, "Hey man, you know, I guess it's not so bad since you weren't that close to him anyway."
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, awful was that?
And at that moment you went, "Oh yeah, do you know what? Good point, actually. Fair play.
You're fine. So right."
Oh yeah. Man, so that's how you found out, because you were on your own at home.
Yeah.
And your mum, in between flights, was just like, "Hey, by the way, your dad's dead. Anyway, I've got a board." Yeah. And then just left you with that bombshell.
Yeah, I don't know. And then when she came home, we talked about it a little bit. And then she talked about one of my siblings. She said that he who was really got the real fucking, the rough end of the stick when it came to the anger, a lot worse than me. She said that she told him and that he said, "You know what, he wasn't a nice person, but he was still my papa." And I remember that a lot, and that's kind of how I feel about it, like, and that's what we refer to him as, papa. Oh man, there's another sad story about that word, which was one time we were in English class and we were reading out a play together, and I was given a character of the kid. And I referred to my parent in the play we were reading out as papa. And I realized at that moment that I hadn't said that word in about 7 years. And I was just like, in the middle of an English lesson. There's a lot of moments I have. And the thing is, I told nobody. Nobody knew about any of this shit until I grew up and started
even when he died. You didn't tell people?
I told people, yeah. I told my friends and stuff. And a lot of people were sympathetic, obviously. And the best response I ever got was, I think maybe 6 or maybe 9 months afterwards, we had this friend, international schools, a lot of times people leave and then they come back and stuff. And there was a guy, Benjamin Yartz, who I will mention because he comes across very well in this story.
Right. He deserves full credit.
Yeah, full credit. He's from Slovenia, but he went to a lot of like his parents were diplomats and stuff, and he's a great guy. And he, I remember sitting there and I told him that. I said, "You just so you know, I think it could be for you because we're friends. I think you should know that my father died." And he said, "That's really shit, man. That's really shit." And it was the nicest response that I ever got from it, yeah. Because I was like, "Yeah, that's what it is. It's shit." And he just said, I'm sorry to hear that." And yeah, that for some reason was one that has always stuck with me.
Yeah, because that sums it up pretty well, doesn't it? That is quite shit.
It is quite shit, yeah.
But fortunately, you weren't that close to him, so actually you're fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
It doesn't matter in the end because I wasn't that close to him.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll tell you the one more story about my father, apparently, which was, I think, was on his deathbed. My eldest brother, he was doing like a year abroad somewhere else, and he didn't have phone signal and stuff. And he got a voicemail that was left for my father, and he didn't hear it until after he had died. And I think he was calling him just to talk to anybody, or just, I don't even remember what was on the voicemail. And my brother had told me about this, and he said, "You know, I can't imagine how alone he felt on that deathbed." He said, "That's the kind of," because I don't think none of the kids would have been there, I think. Maybe his kids from his first marriage, perhaps, but it didn't sound like it in the voicemail. And he said, "You know, despite all about him," he said, "I would never wish that loneliness upon anybody." And I was like, "Wow, man, that's something."
So did he die suddenly, or he was ill for a while?
But you didn't know about idea. It? So he had smoked a lot when he was younger. He had two heart attacks before I was born that I obviously wasn't aware of. But he had obviously he had like a heart problem in general, and then that's what he died of. On the death certificate, it said like cardiac arrest is what they say for anybody because that's how everybody dies. Your heart stops. That's what cardiac arrest is. But I think he had a heart attack again or something heart related for sure.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I got a funny story about this, though, which was I was a nanny once, and there was a kid I was looking after who was like 4 years old, and we were talking about stuff, and he asked about my father. Just, I don't know, it was just being polite stuff. And I said, "Oh, my father's dead, actually." And he said, "Oh, okay. What did he die of?" And I said, "Oh, well, he had a bad heart." And then he went, "He wasn't a good person." And that was... and it really made me laugh because he doesn't understand that a heart is the thing that keeps going. So,
and that's what killed him.
Yeah, that's what killed him. He wasn't a nice person.
But also, based on some of the stories,
yeah. So,
the kid was onto something.
I laugh at that. I laugh at that now. But in that moment when that kid said that, I just went, "Oh,
yeah." I remember, so we once, we had a long drive together because we went to, we were doing a gig in Leicester, was it? Or in Ashby de la Zouch or something like that.
Ashby de la Stoke-on-Tree or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
All these places in the UK that are on something.
All entirely made up. And so we drove to like a village hall in the middle of nowhere. It was like 3 hours there. And then I think some roads were closed on the way back. So it was like 5 hours getting back. Yeah. And we got into some stuff. And I remember talking about, and one, it really made me laugh. We were talking about like our dads. We bonded over the fact our dads had died. And I was, because like you were 16 when your dad died. I was 24 when my dad died. And I was telling you about a friend of mine whose dad had died when we were at school. And I'd spoken to her after my dad died. And she said, "Oh, I think, you know, I think I would have struggled even more if my dad had died when I was older than when I was young."
Yeah.
And I said, "I always thought it would be harder to lose your dad when you're younger." And you went, "Yeah, it is." just straight away. Yeah, no, it is. And I really enjoyed the bluntness of it. Because I always think, like, I was 24. I was an adult. Tom was almost 30. Like, you don't expect to lose your dad, still. But... It's more likely, but 16 is a hard age for it.
Yeah, I think also both of these moments for me happened when I think my brain was in development or like strong development phases. And I think it kind of took me out of it. I often say that I don't think I came into consciousness until I was 20, because I remember as, I don't know if it was because of my father not being around, but I remember feeling as a kid very lost and very, not alone, maybe lonely, but maybe not alone because I had siblings and stuff.
Yeah.
But I didn't have like tons of friends, let alone ones I would, you know, especially, you know, I know now we talk about mental health stuff, especially with kids now, but like as a kid, very rarely was I ever asked how I was doing or how I was feeling, especially not by my classmates. And it became kind of this taboo subject. I think really someone who got it the worst was really my mother, because she was in kind of this international school social situation where everyone had very stable families, and you know, it was like no one there was a single mother or like that, and so she had a lot of issues from that as well, let alone actually having to be married to my father himself. So there was it depends. I mean, obviously I could take comfort in the fact at least that there would have been no relationship, so to speak, of, and if he had stayed it would have been worse. Where I mean, you know, whereas you would have had really nice memories and a genuine person. So there's a loss there that I obviously would not relate to.
Because you weren't close to him, so it was easier.
You know, after all these years, he's not wrong.
He's nailed it.
It's just funny to hear the divorce stories and how very differently they could go, because my dad's plan was very quick split, no court, no nonsense. Kind of like him as a person, no nonsense. Just like, right, get said to my mum, right, you can have the house. I don't want to have to pay like child support, but you can have the house. So that's and then we're quits. And I'll come round and see him every weekend and I'll take him out. And then we're quits. Which you know, when I asked him about it when he was older, he said the thought process, he said, you know, he didn't do it for money, because, you know, getting rid of a house is a stupid thing to do financially. But the idea he had in his head was he didn't want to resent us because he had to pay for us and he was sort of forced to. He thought he'd rather just be in control of that. And he didn't want to resent my mum either, because he thought, you know, if I have to keep giving her money, they'll build resentment. Whereas your dad's, you actually gave him an ultimatum.
I did,
And then he went, gelt or bust. And he was like, it's all about money.
I wonder sometimes how my father became the man who he was, if he was, you know, if he was born that way, or if there's, I you know, that's the only thing. I just wish I could talk to him now just to find out why he acted the way he did. I feel like you came in a very charming, funny atmosphere with it, Tom, but I've been brought it down to reality.
I'm just glad we didn't start talking about the Nazis again. I was like, all right, well, so long as you were like, well, I don't know how he turned out this way, I'm like, oh god, we're going back. We're going back to the fascists.
I don't know, it's a weird thing. It's certainly something that's affected me in some way. I mean, Rich, I think you were going to ask how you think, was that your question you were going to ask?
Yeah, because I think, you know, like you say, you've been left with a lot of questions about why he is the way that, or why he was the way that he was. Sorry, just to reiterate that he's dead there, I almost used the present tense, and just then really had to make sure.
He is dead.
Yeah.
Don't forget.
But
is this a Dead Dad podcast?
It is, yes. Yeah. Welcome.
And if you're listening as well, just remember, your dad's dead too, or... Whoever is dead.
If he's not dead, he will be one day. That's important to bear in mind.
He will ultimately die.
Yeah.
Eventually, everyone will listen to this podcast. That's just the way of the world. So you don't really know why he was the way that he was, but how has the way that he was affected the way that you are? Because I know you fairly well. Like, we've spent a bit of time together, and you don't seem like someone who has taken on many of his traits.
Yes and no. I mean, I'm very abusive to my mother, but other than that...
You promised me you were abusive to no one.
Anyway, as how it's affected me, I don't know, man. I really don't know. I've had this thought a little bit, and this is something I think about a little sometimes. I think for me personally, I haven't had a very strong cultural identity, given the fact that it's spread across three different places, and I haven't had a very strong familial identity. I think that's something we don't ever talk about, this idea of like who you are within a family, like people, if you're a son, if you're a daughter, if you're a mother, father, whatever it may be, or what's your personality relative to a strong family unit.
Yeah,
and I think there's a lot of pillars that make up an individual's identity, sexual, race, nationality, familial, whatever it may be. And I think that makes, once, if those are more easily defined along rules that are like prescribed by society, it becomes a lot easier, I think, to feel calm. Because if you're ever looking for, why am I like this? Why is this a certain way? You can look to those identities for justification, or you can maybe find people who are similar. But when some of those pillars start to get removed, so in my instance, a cultural identity that is significantly strong, or a familial identity, I often find that other parts of you have to make up for that. I often think about it like a pillar holding up like a roof or something like this, mm-hmm. or like a series of pillars holding something up. And so once those are gone, you have to make up for that missing space and to be who you are as a person. And some of those can be other things that you start pulling from or things you find later on in life. But I think also sometimes your natural, who you are as an actual person can fill those spaces. So I've always thought, I don't always know if I know who I am as a person, but I think that once I figure out who I am, it's going to be based off of more me as an individual than like things that society or the world often prescribes for identities. I don't know if, does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's very, very eloquent.
Yeah, so I think if anything, it's forced me to be more of who I am as a person, because I haven't been able to rely on more comfortable things. And I've often felt very sad about that. I've sat and I thought, I just wish these things existed for me to hold on to. But I remember talking to my mother once on the phone, and she said something like about comedy or something like that. I don't know what we were talking about. She said, you know, you're not any of these things, but that's not bad. You're different. And that's not bad. It's, you know, it's just different. And I thought, yeah, okay, that is what it is. We're getting a real, I don't think I've ever shared this much of my deep dive analysis into my own psyche.
That's how we get you. Bring you on, start talking about your dad. Eventually you'll end up talking about yourself.
Yeah, this has been great. I love talking about myself.
After this, it's just getting your national insurance number and then we'll be away basically at that point.
Yeah, I don't know if I've overshared, but so I don't know how it's affected me. I certainly think I have certain thoughts that I wouldn't have had. I remember once I did a bit. I have this joke about like I was the only kid in my class who didn't have a father, mm-hmm. and I realized it made me very sad. But I also realized I had this weird emotional advantage over other children. Like they'd be very upset, and I'd be in the corner of the room like, you know, life's a bitch and then you die. What's the point of this all, huh? I walk around this playground, I see a bunch of fucking school children. That's what I see. You're going, hey, who's got your nose? Buddy, who's got your back? You know, I'm like that. And then it's a few
spots. That's good.
I'm going next month. I'm going to go and see his grave, which is interesting.
Oh wow! Is that the first time?
It'll be the first time, yeah. Because of the relationships in the family, we were forbidden from attending the funeral, so I never got to go.
You didn't go to the funeral?
I did not.
Holy shit!
Forbidden.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again,
by who?
His side of the family, because they were organizing it. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but you guys,
because he had these other kids.
I don't think already. The other kids, he kind of, well, man, he pretty much neglected them after a while. Like that other side, like those kids, I feel really bad for, because he was like very much manipulated them against each other and stuff. Sorry, this is is nuts, the deeper we get. But yeah, I'm gonna go see. I'm going with one of my brothers. It was interesting. One of my brothers has no interest in doing it. I think my sister perhaps does. But yeah, my eldest brother and I, myself, I'm flying to Vienna only for like 2 nights to do this. Just because I can't really get the time off work or like gigs and stuff. So I'm flying in, going to go do that. And I have no idea what to expect, honestly. I don't know how I'm going to feel about it, but yeah. I'm glad I'm doing it, because it was kind of suggested before and it just never worked out timing wise. And it's like it's a 100-pound return flight. I'm going to go see some friends when I'm there as well, who like from high school who now live there. I might even send you a voicemail.
Please do.
To tell you what that experience is like.
From the grave.
Yeah. Hey guys, I'll do one of those TikTok videos. Hey guys, I'm just here at my father's grave. You know your boy had to get some flowers for him. That's what they always do. You know your girl had to try this bubble tea.
Bubble tea at the grave. Pull one out for my dad.
Yeah, pour a shot out.
Yeah.
I'd love to receive a voice note of you from the grave, drinking bubble tea, holding flowers, trying to be sassy but sobbing audibly.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to cry or not. I don't, but I think it'll also be a really good opportunity for me and my eldest brother to talk about what that meant to us, because he obviously, I mean, my eldest brother, his father died before he was born, and so my father was his father. ostensibly. And so he had actually met my father a few times after my parents divorced or were in the divorce proceedings, independently of the rest of the family. He went to go see him and that side of the family. So it'd be interesting to talk to him just about this. And I don't know if I'm going to cry or not, or if it'll be emotional, but I don't know if I'll have any feel. I'm glad I'm doing it. And I think I'm going to do it once. Maybe I'll do it. Maybe if I ever become a dad, which is something I'm very, maybe that's also like, I'm very keen on becoming a father, maybe because of what I didn't have.
But people talk about having like a father as a role model for to learn that's how you would then become a father. But I guess it also works in negative that you can look at your father and go, well, just don't do that. And that's got to be some way to doing it well.
Michael Dawale, who's a comedian as well, he has a great joke about this where he says, you know, I want to be a better father than my father was or something like that. He says, but in order for me to do that, I just have to like come back with the milk, you know? I just have to come back. I just got to go to the store. And I can, even if I come back 15 years later, I'm still a better father than my father was.
I've still smashed it.
Right, of course. The standards, the things that you've got to avoid doing are being verbally abusive.
Yeah.
Can you avoid
As established, which you've never done, and none of us have ever done. We've never been abusive.
Yeah.
So you just keep that record going. Your slate clean. You'll be fine. Yeah.
Just follow it through. But you also mentioned some nice memories, like taking the kid out for ice cream. You know, letting them rest. Let your child rest his head on your loud tummy.
A big loud tummy. Yeah. I don't know. I sort of it's a weird process. I've only really come to terms with it, I think, in the last year of this calmness about it. I went to therapy a little bit last year for 4 sessions. It wasn't really that helpful for me. I didn't find it that great. It was more like talking to other people. Mm-hmm. But one of the times the therapist she asked me a widow question. We got that in the end. Yeah, I knew it. she asked me. She said, like, if your father was around right now, what would you say to him? And I said, I don't think I'd have anything to say to him because he just wouldn't understand my life as it is now. Like he had no the who I'm now as a person is so, I mean, it'll obviously be different. I'm like almost 20 years older than the last time he properly saw me at the age of 9. Like I'm 26 now. So in 3 years at that time. It's one of those things where like, I definitely growing up, I had like people I looked up to and I had certain father figures. I remember this was one time I did a gig and there was a comedian there who I was just starting out in comedy and he was really nice and like supportive to me and like really like optimistic and stuff. And he did my gig at one point, and as I was walking home, I started crying because I just thought, oh, imagine if I had somebody that was like that to me my whole life, you know, it's sort of the absence of a father figure. I've had a few people like that as well, where I've just sort of thought it'd be nice to get some guidance from a random person and stuff like this. But generally speaking, I'm quite calm about it all. But it's certainly, I'm not going to pretend that there are moments that are really sad. Like this past year on Father's Day, it really took a lot out of me for some reason. It just felt really sad. But I also decided to post about it on Facebook or on Instagram or whatever. I did a post about it saying how I felt, and I found that really comforting as well. And so since then, it's just a lot of, and then talking to my mother about it, realizing really who he was as a person, all this kind of just sheds the weight. So now when I talk, weirdly enough, when I was younger and people talk about their fathers, I'd be really upset about it. But now when I hear people who have great fathers, I'm really happy for them. Like, I'm just glad that they got to have that.
That's nice. It's interesting as well that talking.
Yeah, it's not true either.
But that is the thing that you should say.
These people.
But it sounds like talking about it, because you said you never talked about it at the time when the divorce happened, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But talking about it seems like it's made a real difference to the point now where the one person that you've not really got anything to say to would be your dad.
Fuck, really, dude, that was good. Jesus Christ. Oh my God, Rich. You just therapied the shit out of this situation.
Not my first podcast.
Oh my God, dude, that's an incredible epiphany. Yeah.
But it does mean
sure.
that you could, you might have nothing to say, but if there is a new Tron film coming out, then just take him there. You don't have to talk.
Man,
there
we can tell this guy's trying to wrap up a podcast. He's thrown in the callbacks.
So many outs. He gives like 3 different outs.
Take whichever one you need.
Succession.
Before we do go, just a quick segue that is related, but I'm interested to know how much. You've just released your 4-star Scotsman reviewed, many 5-star reviews, I think, in fact.
Only 4.
Edinburgh.
Only 4.
Well, I can say 5 stars. Then it's my mistake and not yours.
Great. Let's reset.
Phil Kostoletsky's 5-star reviewed Edinburgh show, award-winning sellout show, which is called Daddy's Home.
Yeah,
and that's out on YouTube now. Is it, how much of the daddy in that is your daddy, and how much are you the daddy? Is the question I've decided to ask.
That's a really good question, actually. So it's not available on YouTube. It's actually through my website. So if people buy it, so that's fine. It's just,
but it is 5 stars.
It is great. I'm really happy with how it turned out. Yeah, it's good fun. How much of it? So I talk about my father a little bit of it, and he certainly plays a part in it. But that's a really, again, fucking great question. How much is it my daddy, and how much is it me? I'd say it's mainly more about me and my life and my observations, and my father plays a part in it for sure. But it's not like, it's just an hour of stand up. It's not one of these like Edinburgh fringy, you know, sad boy shows. So it's more, I think it's just more like a few observations that I've had about it. So one of them, I talk about how I find people who never went through anything as a kid disgusting and ugly, and how I find people who've been through trauma very sexually attractive. So there's parts about like that. There's a bit in it about like these weird memories. It's just more about like just random bits about family and my father, but a lot of it, the reason it's called Daddy's Home, well, first of all, it's a fun title. It doesn't really mean anything. But also, I just thought, I had a joke in part of it where I talk about, I like referring to myself as Daddy because I think it's just kind of fun and silly. And then, weirdly enough, the other themes of it came through. So it's not, I don't know. This is a good question. I don't know. You know what's interesting is that I did the show at The Fringe, and I was doing that whole bit where I talked about my father and a bit more honestly, but still trying to keep it light and funny. And a comedian, this guy Ali Sultan, who was visiting from the States, and he was watching me do the show, and he said, you know, when you do those parts of the show, you can tell you're not over it yet. He said, you can tell that there's a reservation there. And I was like, fuck you, dude, I can fucking do this material, it's fine. I'm not reserved at all. I don't know what you're talking about. And then I watched the special recording and I saw it, and I was like, I don't think I'm quite over this yet. For those parts of the show, if you watch it, maybe you'll see it, maybe you won't. No one else has messaged me yet out of the people who've seen it to say that they felt that way. But I watched it and I went, I'm not 100% comfortable with it yet. And I think that's okay. And that's fine. But yeah, so.
Well, there's a challenge for our listeners. Watch Phil's special and see if you can pinpoint the moment that his heart breaks.
that's funny.
That was Philip Kosolecki. A really, really interesting interview, I thought. He's a very funny man, but a very insightful and eloquent man as well. It was a really fun hour or so that we spent with him. And one thing that I spoke to Phil earlier today and that he did want me to clarify is that he talked a bit about his about the alimony issue with his dad. And he felt like he didn't really explain it properly. And it is quite a complex thing that child support and alimony are two different things. Alimony is sort of more where you can prove that together in a marriage you've sort of generated wealth together, and it's sort of paying back of that wealth. So he sort of wanted to get across. So that's not maybe super factually accurate, but it's sort of his remembering of it as a child. And I think what's important about it is that, you know, as a child, then he may not have really understood, but he knew enough that he wanted to get involved and to try and do something about that situation. But yeah, there we go.
And either way, his dad wanted das Geld. He wanted the cash.
He wanted the cash, yeah.
He wanted his child, which is sort of an awful thing.
Yeah, yeah. But listen, if you liked Philip on that, and I'm sure you did, he has a special out. He recorded his show, Daddy's Home. We talked about it a little bit in the interview. And that is on the internet right now. And
and that is on the internet.
So if you go to
where
your laptop, and you open it up, or another laptop if possible. If that's if
any
you've not got your own
laptop's good,
or internet cafe, possibly, and you open up a thing called a browser. Now, don't panic at this point. The whole of the World Wide Web is in there. But what you want to do is you want to go to the search bar.
Rich, I've panicked.
Why have you panicked? I specifically said don't panic. What have you done?
Panicked.
What have you done?
I didn't know what search bar was.
What have you put in there?
But where am I?
It
knows where I am.
You've panicked. Don't do that. What you want to put into the search bar is you want to put in Philip Kostoletsky, which is PHILIPPKOST. I mean, his name is in the episode. I'd probably
it's
just
in the
get it
episode
from that.
Title.
It's gonna be a lot easier. PhilipKostoletsky.com/
You completely backed out. You backed out of trying to spell it. That's what happened.
Well, no,
you panicked.
I'm looking
you
directly
panicked.
At it.
You panicked. But you
I'll
panicked.
Be honest, I got like 10 letters in and was like, there's no need for this. No
you
one's,
panicked.
No one's
That's
got
what
a
happened.
Pen and paper and is copying all this down. PhilipKostoletsky.com/daddies-home. Or just go to PhilipKostoletsky.com. I mean, that's his website. All his stuff is on there. But the special is really, really good. And you will enjoy it. And do just sort of copy and paste his name from the episode description and whack that into Google. You'll find him. Before we go, Phil mentioned in his interview that he was going to visit his dad's grave a little while after we recorded it. And he has since been. He has recorded his reaction to that experience, and he's happy for us to play that out for you now. So here is Philip Kostoletsky reflecting on the experience of visiting his dad's grave for the first time.
What a lovely way to end the show.
So yeah, I went to go see the grave a few weeks ago. I went with my brother, and the experience was kind of okay. You know, I didn't really feel a lot of things. My brother and I both talked about this. We both said that we kind of expected to feel more. Looking at the tombstone was weird. I felt something. I don't know what it is, and I still haven't been able to figure out what it is that I felt, but I felt something. I think the biggest thing that kind of took me by surprise is seeing my own last name on a tombstone. That was really like something odd, just to see, you know, because I had had grandparents that have died, but they both had different surnames to me. And then weirdly enough, two graves down, and every time I say that, I think of the Dolly Parton song, Two Doors Down, you know, two graves down, there was my grandparents from my father's side. And so I got to see my surname two extra times. So the whole experience was, it was interesting. I'm really, really glad I did it, but I don't know what I took from it. I don't know if I took any messages or if I took any feelings from it. We lit a candle, we put our names on the candle, and that was really nice. It was a really cathartic experience. But I think it was just really nice to be there with my brother and his wife. And then the rest of the day was really good. I just did a lot of stuff around Vienna. I just kind of enjoyed the city, kind of, you know, connected to that cultural side of it. So I think it's weirdly enough, maybe the day as a whole that I really remember fondly. And I think the grave was just an interesting part of that. Yeah, I kind of both of us, we were not disappointed we didn't feel anything more, but we just were surprised. Like, I really thought it would affect me emotionally, and it didn't. Maybe that's a sign of, like, you know, that, you know, I've kind of dealt with it in a lot of positive ways. Yeah, I'm really glad I did it, but I can't say, I don't know, maybe the meaning of it will come a few years later. Maybe it's something I'll have to come back to. Maybe I'll have to visit it again, or, you know, the significance of it will only become clear in a few years' time.
What a lovely way to end the show. Although it's never over until we say the mortal words.
Which are?
Death comes for us all.
But it comes to you first.
We'll be back next week. See you then.
See you then. Comes to you first.